Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the translation and transliteration of contact information CDP working group on the 9th of January. And in the Adobe Connect room, we have Amar El-Khada, Chris Dillon, Jennifer Chung, Jim Galvin, Mary Wong for staff, Peter Dernbach, Peter Green, Peter Rindfors, Piti Nan, Komoran Patana, Rudy van Snip, and Wanawik Acupuncture. For staff, we have Julie Hedlund, Lars Hoffman, Mary Wong, that I've mentioned, and myself, Linda Sangerville. And in the meeting on the line, we have Jim Galvin, Chris Dillon, and Amar. If it is easier for you to talk, perhaps you should connect to the telephone line. May I please also just remind you to say your name before speaking for the transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Jim.
Thank you very much, Glenn, and Happy New Year to everyone, and welcome to our first meeting of the Translation and Transliteration of Contact Information PDP Working Group in January 9th, 2014. I'm glad to have you all with us, and this is Julie Hedlund again for the transcript, and let me just start out by reminding everyone that all, according to the working group guidelines, all working group participants need to have a statement of interest. When you join the working group, you should have either created a statement of interest, and Glenn de Saint-Jury would have sent you the link to do that, or you would have provided updates to your statement of interest if necessary. If you have already a statement of interest that you've provided and it doesn't need updating, then there's nothing that you need to do. But what we do want to do is make sure that on our list of members and the membership for the working group, that there is a statement of interest listed and linked for every member. So just a reminder to go ahead and do your statement of interest if you haven't already done so. And the other item of business that we always start out with on every working group call is we ask if there are any updates to anyone's statement interest. So I will ask that now. Does anyone have an update to their statement of interest that they would like to mention on this call? I'm not seeing anyone raise their hand in the Adobe Connect room, and I see that Lars is sending in the link to the chat room showing where we are missing SOIs. So please do follow that link and check to see if your SOI is in place. And the next item of business on the agenda is that at our last meeting, Chris Dillon and Rudy Vansnik had volunteered as co-chairs of this PDP working group. We did ask on the list if there were any other volunteers. I have seen none. And so at this point, the PDP working group should affirm whether or not they want to have Chris and Rudy as co-chairs of this group. And to do that, I might ask if you wanted to use the status symbol. You see where there's a little symbol at the top of the little hand, a person with a hand raised. If you wanted to, if you agree that with Chris and Rudy as co-chairs, you can click on the agree symbol, and I do see that someone has raised his hand. It is Yoav Kirin. I see Yoav has now changed his symbol to the check mark, the green check mark. But of course, if you have any questions, if you have any statements, please raise your hand, and we'll hear from you. I see there are a few people in the room that we haven't heard from. Peter Green, Pitinan, Sarmad, and Wanawit, do you have an opinion as to whether or not you support Chris and Rudy as co-chairs? I see some more check marks. Thank you very much, Sarmad. I see in the chat room that Sarmad supports. And Wanawit in the chat room says he also supports. Pitinan, do you have an opinion you would like to express? I think we have you are the only one we have not heard from who is not staff, and staff don't vote, needless to say. I think we can at this point say that we have a majority in support of Chris and Rudy as co-chairs. Do you see that Yoav has raised his hand? Yoav, do you have a statement you'd like to make? Perhaps not. I think that then this appears that we have affirmed Chris and Rudy as co-chairs of this working group. I want to thank you all, and at this point, I would like to turn over the meeting to Chris and Rudy.
Thank you very much, Julie. This is Chris Dillon speaking. Actually, Rudy and I didn't decide who would chair this meeting in case we were made co-chair. So, Rudy, is it all right for me to do today? Because there's a lot of wiki stuff. That's the main reason.
Rudy speaking. Yes, Chris, you have been initiating the list of questions also, so I will follow up and check on the Adobe if hands are raised or if there are additional information to add to what you're saying. So go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Coming back to the agenda, the next thing we need to look at is a review of the charter, and that's just really for people who, especially for people who are new to this, that we just really go through the charter and highlight the important parts of it. So, Julie, were you perhaps intending to do that part of the agenda, or are you happy for me to do that?
This is Julie Hedlund. Chris, I'm happy to go through it if you would like me to, or I am happy to defer to you, whichever you prefer.
I'd be grateful if you would go through it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's my pleasure. This is Julie Hedlund, and what I have done is I have pulled up the charter in the Adobe Connect room, really the main and most important part of the charter is Section 2, the mission, purpose, and deliverables. And I had thought and suggested to Chris and Rudy that we should spend a little bit of time going through the charter, since we do have quite a number of people in this, I think, in this working group who may not have been that familiar with the charter as it was being developed. We do have some people in this working group who were part of the development of the charter, and so I apologize to those people because this will be a little bit duplicative, but I hope that this will help everyone to understand the background, but also the mission and scope of this particular working group. So the background, and I think we discussed this some last meeting as well, is that the GNSO Council requested an issue report on three issues, and that is whether it's desirable to translate contact information to a single common language or transliterate contact information into a single common script, and then who should decide who should bear the burden to take on this task. I'm not going to read through the full text here. You can do that yourselves. And then the third question was whether or not to start a PDP to address these questions. The final issue report was sent to the Council in March of 2013, and on the 13th of June 2013, the Council approved the initiation of the PDP. So the PDP itself then addresses the first two questions, whether it's desirable to translate contact information or transliterate it, and who should decide who should bear the burden. One thing I should point out, and this is a question that was raised previously when we were developing the charter, is why is the phrasing who should decide who should bear the burden? Why is the work group, for example, not saying, you know, just this group or this group should bear the burden? This has to do with the fact that this is a policy development process, and so the council may not the council may wish to say that, for instance, that ICANN or, you know, the ICANN CEO or the ICANN staff should decide, based on the information presented in the PDP, who should bear the burden, or, you know, or someone else, or perhaps, you know, the GNSO Council, that it itself decides who should bear the burden. But it's it sort of takes that question to a slightly higher level, because it is a really key policy question. There is no doubt going to be that there will be a burden to do this this work if it is decided that it is desirable to translate or transliterate. But the most important part of the charter here, as I'm moving along, and I think I've unsynced this so you can move the document yourself, is the mission and scope. And a lot of this information follows a template. The template is part of the GNSO Council operating procedures, and it is part of the, and within that, it is part of the working group guidelines. And in the working group guidelines, there is a template for how a charter is structured. And a charter always includes a mission and scope. And in this case, this PDP working group is tasked to provide the GNSO Council with a policy recommendation regarding the translation and transliteration of contact information. And there is actually another working group, an expert working group, which we discussed and described at our last, in our first meeting of this working group, and that working group is tasked with determining the appropriate internationalized domain name registration data requirements and data model for registry directory services. And Jim Galvin is leading the group that is devising a data model, and so the work of this group will fold into the work of that expert working group. And so as part of the mission and scope, we go back to the fact that that these two issues, whether it's desirable to translate and transliterate and who should bear the burden, are the two issues that are in scope of the work of this working group. And that's actually a very important a consideration, because the scoping of a PDP is something that happens when the issue report is developed, and is also something that ICANN legal staff is involved with to make sure that that the work is within scope of a PDP, and then the charter needs to stick to the key questions that were enumerated in the issue report. However, of course, the charter can delve quite deeply into into the issues that were identified in the issue report, and can, you know, develop other questions that may relate to those issues. So the charter contains also some background. You know, why is this an issue? It is because the WHOIS protocol does not specify U.S. ASCII as the exclusive character set for text requests and text content encoding, and no standards exist for all WHOIS protocol implementations to signal support of character sets other than U.S. ASCII. Then there is some background of what is contact information, and that relates to the registration accreditation agreement. These are data elements that must be provided by registrars in response to a query, but the RAA does not require that these elements must be translated or transliterated. And these elements are the name, organization, postal address of the registered name holder, technical contact, and admin contact. So what this means essentially is that if I, for example, wished to go into the WHOIS and I wished to find out information about a domain name holder in, say, China, and the, you know, and I was Chinese and the information that was returned to me was in ASCII and not in a Chinese script, I probably would not be able to recognize or read that information, and so essentially that information would be useless to me. And that is the basis of this next paragraph where and this came out of the work of the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group, that to balance the needs and capabilities of the local registrant with the need of the potential global user of this data is one of the questions is whether or not domain name registration data directory services should support multiple representations of the same registration data in different languages or scripts. So that's essentially what I was trying to just describe. And then there is a description of what is translation and what is transliteration, and some issues that the IRD working group raised concerning how translation and transliteration could vary across languages and scripts, how people may translate or translate differently, and how would a registrar determine different spellings. So there are several key issues that we call out here, and then some of the differences in the scripts, and I see that I have pulled up an earlier version of the charter, and I do apologize for that. This actually has some red lines that we made earlier. How interesting! I thought we had the latest version in here. At any rate, this is actually still the same in the current charter. It just happens to be highlighted in red line. But one of the things that the working group that was developing the charter drafting team did, was asked that there should be some specific questions included in the charter, and these are called out here, that talk about, that get into some of the deeper issues involving, involving these two issues. For instance, what are the benefits of doing this? Should this be mandatory? And for whom? And what impact might this have on the RAA? Later in this in the agenda, we have some other questions that really are an outgrowth of the charter that Chris and Rudy have suggested that we look at. And then the charter goes on to provide some more information out of the that came out of the IRD working group, but one of the important items here to call out is that this PDP working group will not be limited to considering the alternatives, possible approaches suggested by the IRD working group. That is, the various ways that this translation and transliteration could happen, but is encouraged to consider all possible alternatives to consult with legal staff when considering alternatives, and also to look at the work of other PDPs and working groups related to IDNs and who is. And the charter drafting team felt that this was quite important, and there are a number of groups that have done work in this area, and staff will help in collecting information on anything that is related to this, you know, anything that other groups have done that are related to the work of this working group, so that we're not duplicating efforts and that we're gathering any information, we're gathering all relevant information, let me put it that way. And then the charter drafting team suggested that that the working group may want to consider who should bear the cost, you know, within the limits of the scoping of this issue, and that the working group will review and check relevant recommendations that may arise from the expert working group that is looking at the purpose of GTLD directory services, and staff, of course, will help and gather that information. The rest of the charter deals with there is going to be, at minimum, an initial report and a final report coming out as a deliverable from this working group. The working group is expected to develop timelines and its deliverables, or timelines for its deliverables. And then the rest of the charter is sort of boilerplate information. It's open to, you know, membership is open to all interested parties, but we have encouraged people to join who have particular experience in translation and transliteration of languages and scripts. And there's information about the formation, dependencies, and dissolution of the group, information about the roles of staff, rules of engagement, and how the working group makes its decisions, and this is taken directly from the working group guidelines. And I'm not going to go through all this now, but I do highly recommend that you spend some time reading it. And so this is I'm just passing through the decision-making section. And what happens if there are disagreements, and how those problems or issues are escalated, and then closure and the working group self-assessment. All working groups are expected to complete a self-assessment when they have completed their work. So I know I just went through a lot of information here. And what I'd like to do is turn things over to Chris and Rudy, as and we can look, we can answer any questions that arise. And I'm looking at the chat. Rudy has said, "Do we need to indicate who is the liaison to the GNSO within this working group?" And yes, we do need to have a liaison to the GNSO, and what we would ask is for someone who is a GNSO council member in this group to volunteer to be a liaison, and then we would submit that request to the GNSO probably as part of their consent agenda. So we can formally ask that on the list and during this meeting as well. And Amr has pointed out something that I was going to mention later, but I think it's very important to note now. The policy development process specifically says that a PDP working group has to request input and, in fact, statements from SOs, from the statements from the stakeholder groups and constituencies, but also input from the supporting organizations and advisory committees. And in fact, let me just mention the actual language here. And essentially, in the PDP, it says that the PDP team, and that is the PDP working group, should formally solicit statements from each stakeholder group and constituency in the early stages of the PDP, and that these stakeholder groups and constituencies should at a minimum have 35 days to complete such a statement once it's formally requested. And the PDP team is encouraged to formally seek the opinion of other ICANN advisory committees and supporting organizations as appropriate for those that may have expertise experience in this issue considered under the PDP working group. And then also the PDP team should seek input from other SOs and ACs, and the SOs and ACs should receive a response from the PDP team on this input. So this is meant to be an early step in the process, and thank you very much, Amr, for mentioning that. And also, thank you very much, Peter and Amr, and for reminding me that Ching Chao did volunteer to be the GNSO liaison for this working group. I want to also make sure that this has been formally recognized. I will look back at the minutes of the last council meeting because I think that, and I'm sorry not to have checked this before this meeting, but I think that that step happened at the same time that the charter was approved. But I'll follow up on that and make sure that it has been formally recognized. I think that I've tried to cover everything, and I'll turn things back to Chris and happy to help answer any questions.
Thank you very much for that, Julie. It's a very good summary of a complicated document and some other issues as well. So may I ask if there are any questions about any aspect of that before we move into the next item on the agenda? All right. Seeing nothing in Adobe Connect, we'll move on to the proposed questions, and they've just come up on the screen. And actually, just before we start going through this list, there are one or two things I would like to explain, and that is that the idea is that this is a sort of a brainstorm session, so it's a way of looking at what could the parameters of the project be by answering these questions at this early stage. We're hoping to get an idea of the areas we will need eventually to cover. And really the main idea is to save time. By doing this at an early stage, we are starting to think about what sorts of things we're going to need to do in the different areas of the project. And I am suggesting that we do this in the wiki. So part of the wiki will be actually looking at these questions, and the answers will break down into pages under the various questions. And in fact, obviously the major questions in the charter, the two big questions that Julie was talking about, whether it is desirable to translate contact information, that one, and who should decide, obviously that will be covered. And also the smaller question, what exactly the benefits to the community are, and all of those questions will be covered in the wiki. And the reason for choosing the wiki to do that is that it should be possible to have a sort of a summary of what we're doing at a sort of a high level of the wiki, so people can look at the wiki and see fairly quickly what's going on, and then those people who are interested in getting detail about the various aspects can then drill down through the wiki. So that's really the thinking behind these questions. So may I ask if there are any questions about the approach, questions about the questions? Okay, seeing no questions in Adobe Connect, we might as well move forwards. And I mean, the order of these questions may be important, so we may start our brainstorm and actually then discover that really it would have been better if the questions had been in a slightly different order, but you know, eventually we have to start somewhere. So I think perhaps let's have a go at looking at what is contact information, which is the first one. And in fact, some amount of work has been done in the taxonomies that were circulated before the meeting. So if you've had a look at those documents that were circulated, there is already this what is contact information. So I just wonder whether anybody would like to expand on what was circulated, or you know, perhaps make some comment about it.
Rudy speaking.
Rudy, would you like to address that?
Yes, I would like to address Rudy speaking. In fact, a document in which we found a very good description of contact information is the SAC 054 document report, in which there is a data model description that gives a very clear view on what is considered in contact information. And I would eventually point to Jim Galvin, who has been a leader in this work, to eventually add some information if he has additional info to deliver.
Thank you very, very much for that. I would like to propose that provisionally we answer the question within the wiki with that answer as given in SAC 054. I wonder if Jim might like to say something about that definition.
Yes, thank you. This is Jim Galvin.
Thank you.
I think it would probably be better to say that it was not the purpose of SAC 54 to state what is contact information, but rather to provide a way to represent registration data and what that might look like. What we chose to do was to take a look at what might be described as commonly regarded as contact information, and you know, took a survey of what was out there and what was available, and we simply collated that and pulled it together. I think a number of these exercises have been done before. ICANN staff has done a similar exercise for different things. There's an IETF working group which has done this exercise also to collect data. EPP, the protocol, has its own definition of what's contact information. And even the EWG, the expert working group on new directory services, has taken a look at what is contact information. So I think we have a number of sources to draw from in order to decide what we want to use. Anyway, I guess my main point is I don't think that ESSAC wants to take authorship of what is contact information. Our goal was simply to take advantage of the various sources and describe the commonality. And I think there's, you know, consensus in a de facto way, if not a stated material or official way, and we should draw on that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that, Jim. Now, I mean, certainly two of the other places we need to look at are therefore the IETF and the EWG. Now, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the third one. Could you repeat that, please? There was a protocol that had a definition of it.
EPP, the Extensible Provisioning Protocol. That's the protocol that at least all the GTLDs use between registries and registrars, and many CCTLDs, though not all.
Okay, thank you very much for that. Okay, so I think provisionally we should run with that 054 definition, but with an action item for the various members of the working group to have a critical look at it. Perhaps that's the best way to leave that one. Looking at the chat room, Rudy is also suggesting EPP. So that's the fourth one. Okay.
Speaking, just to clarify, the EPP is the process that is used, the electronic protocol that is used for registrars to register domain name, so it's probably part of that protocol also.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, for the time being, unless anybody else would like to say something about that first question, I propose we move on to the next one. Okay, seeing nothing in Adobe Connect. Okay, we're now looking at why. So, this definitely needs to be a very early question. Why are we doing this project? So, and here I think to a great extent, we're actually on our own, so I think really winkling out, discovering the reasons for this, that's going to be quite a major part of this working group, and also on a micro level. There will be certain things that will be necessary to support various parts of this. So depending how it develops, certain things may become necessary. And so there has been talk in the past of a sort of matrix whereby there may be particular features to translation and transliteration, and some of them, for example, may be just free to get, and others may cost a small amount of money, and yet others may be expensive, and so you end up with a sort of matrix coming out of this. I wonder if anybody has anything. Anything they would like to say about this particular question? Well, the nothing in the. I think I can see Samad typing something. We might just wait for that. But I think certainly questions with no answers are possibly the ones that we'll need to come back to the most. I'll just wait a few moments. I think there are comments coming, so we'll just perhaps see what those are. So Samad is suggesting that we look at the users of Whois. Yes, So that's part of it, isn't it? So,
Chris, maybe just an additional comment to that question. Rudy speaking.
Yeah.
I would rather draw the question as, why should we not do this work? Makes it maybe easier to just clarify that there is a reason to do it. If there is no reason to not do it, it's the inverse of why should we do it? Just allow thinking I'm doing.
Thank you, Rudy. I think that this is Chris speaking. I think that makes huge sense. We can really use both of those approaches. So, you know, I suspect there will be things that we absolutely should not do, and that's going to save time on occasions. Now, I can see Yoav has put his hand up. Yoav, would you like to speak about this?
Yes, that's actually a good point. Why we should not do it. And I can think about a few reasons why we shouldn't do it. One would be, you know, we want to keep it on one standard, one script in this case. This is not IDNs. IDNs were, and I'm as one of the people that has been promoting IDNs in the past 13, almost 14 years, no one can blame me as not doing things in favor of the communities, but I could say that we do want to do IDNs. We don't want to create a mess. And a reason why not to to have translation and transliteration of content information would be to keep everything in one standard, one script, that it is at the end clear and make sure there's no confusion. This now, there's, I can think of different reasons why we should do it. And for example, and I'm not providing my opinion at this point. I'm just saying, just raising the issues, and why we should do this in general is to allow people from different communities to actually better understand who is behind specific websites in their own by reading this information in their own language. The question is, and this is what we've raised before, how important is this, and what, how different it is from the actual current state of using Latin or English language for who is, and whether, you know, and again, then measuring and weighting the costs to the community for the in front of the benefit. So just generally raising this thing hopefully to another level.
Thank you very much for that. I think it's quite important at this early stage that we all of us feel that we're not necessarily giving our opinions about this. I mean, you know, if any one person knew the answer to this, we wouldn't have formed the group. So, you know, this is very much a matter of talking things through and coming to opinions. If we don't need to do this, or sorry, if we should not do this, then this working group may be a lot shorter than we were expecting it to be. So I very much appreciate your rather provocative suggestion on that front. But yes, I mean, we can certainly start to collect reasons why people in different communities may want a new version of who is, which, you know, is more accessible in their own language. So thank you very much for that. Now, yes, and actually in the Adobe Connect, Petter Rindforth is saying, is giving more reasons from legal and marketing perspectives. So that's an interesting addition. And I see, now there are two hands up, one hand up. Piti Nan, would you like to say something about this?
Yes. Hello. Hi. Can anybody hear me well?
Yes.
Hello. Yes. Okay. So I'm Piti Nan, Kuoman Patana. I will support that why we are doing this is the matter of the legal as well. As I'm from Thailand, which we don't use the Latin script for our legal binding things. And for example, we can write two different Thai words and its translation into the same English word. Mm. So I think doing this will probably set a kind of procedure internally as well. How do we represent into the common script? And from there, then we can binding legally into our local jurisdiction. So that would be my suggestion why we should be doing this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think it is very frequently the case that words do not correspond, even very closely related languages like French and English. You know, words tend not to correspond. So, you know, a very simple example would be the French word histoire, which it can have two totally different meanings in English. So one would be history, but the other one would be story. In English, they are completely different, but in French, it's the same word. And that is a phenomenon that you find across languages, that you get complicated relationships. And so, you know, for example, if we were thinking of setting up a translation system which would be easily verifiable, you know, even with a simple example like that, very often it just is not possible to go directly between languages, even when they are very closely related. So it's a huge issue. So thank you very much for that. Now there are a couple of things going on in Adobe Connect, and so Yoav is asking about local script will often be clear, whether a local script will often be clearer from a legal point of view. I mean, I guess within individual jurisdictions, I suppose often the local language will have priority over a translation. I'm not a lawyer, but that's what I would guess. And then, oh yes, sorry, Peter Rindforth is giving an answer to that. Yes, if both versions are available, and then how that is done fairly in a clear way. Okay, and then various hands up. Jim, would you like to add something to this?
Yes, thank you. This is Jim Galvin. On the question of why we're doing this work, is it okay to address that question still?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
So going back to the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group of 2 years ago that created the questions that spawned the issue report that brought us here and into existence, from my point of view, as a participant in that group, and I say that because I was also a co-chair of that working group, but as a participant to that group, this question comes up because the starting premise is that we need internationalized registration information. So you start from the premise that a registrant should have. And we struggled with this word at the time. I'm going to use it now because, frankly, I forget exactly what we did and the phrase that we used at the time because I remember quite extended discussions about it. But an individual registrant should have the right to use their own local language and their own local script in order to enter their contact information. Yeah. And if you start with that as a premise, that immediately gives you the question of translation and transliteration.
Yeah.
There's no way to get around that. The existing WHOIS system is U.S. ASCII-based.
Yes.
People do a variety of things in order to, I'll say, abuse that to get other things out there. So you also have to accept as an inference that that protocol is going to change, and that's the work of the IETF WIRDS group. But given that all that's going to happen, and if a registrant should be able to use what they know in order to represent themselves, in order to get a domain name, you have to ask the question of translation and transliteration and whether or not it'll be present. If you're going to take it in a form which is different than what is currently permitted by the system that's deployed, if you're going to take it in a language or script that can't be output because the output has to be in U.S. ASCII or Latin-based, how are you going to get there? And that's why this question exists. It's a practical question. And it just logically follows. I don't think there's any way to escape answering this question. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much for that. So it sounds if, after all, the working group will be rather a longer existence. Yoav, would you like to raise something at this point?
Yeah, I would actually want to... Let's talk about what Peter brought up, which is the legal issue. And I think, as I see it, this is the main reason that why we are here. I know I said something before that, as you said, a little provocative. And I'm not pointing out my personal view. But if I do want to point out my personal view, the main reason to actually have this would be the legal clarity or the legal issue to allow, as we've heard in different places, the local script is allowing a better legal action in problematic cases, and that's for sure something that is a good reason to do this. I'm just bringing out. I know it's a little too early, but just bringing an idea that I just thought about, and I want to share, and maybe we all. Talk about it further. If we go down this road and decide that this is important and maybe it's even reasonable from the cost perspective, if we are talking on this, the main benefit as a legal for the legal community or for legal actions, definitely the local script that would be chosen for a specific WHOIS or for a specific domain name should be, I would kind of do it like in that we will have a default or maybe a main or leading script of a specific WHOIS, which means so when a registrant will decide they want in to have their WHOIS in Thai, so they will put in their details in Thai. And those details will be translated or transliterated to Latin or something like that. Well, not the opposite, okay? Not the opposite around. That's so the formal WHOIS of that domain name or the legal WHOIS of that domain name will be in the local script. I'm just thinking that this is the right way to go. I know it's too early to talk about that, but just to have this shared with others. That's it.
Thank you for that, Yoav. I'm afraid we are starting to run out of time on this call, so I'm apologies especially to Amr. I know you want to add something, but I think we need to use the last 5 minutes just to round the meeting up. Just to confirm that we've got the actions about... The the first question, which is looking at the definitions of contact information in various locations, and also to revisit this why and there needs to be a wiki article which summarizes that discussion on why, I think. We are intending to have weekly calls in the working group until we get to a stage where perhaps we're not filling the calls, at which point we can revisit that. But until things start to slow down, I think we should meet. Once a week. And in fact, I'll just ask whether anybody would like to add anything to what we've just been saying. And with the few remaining minutes. Yes, and that makes sense. So, Amr, if you would like to put your question in the last couple of minutes, that would make me feel a lot better. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. This is Amr. I won't get into the question now. I could do that at a different call, but I was just going to respond to your last request of if there's anything else we'd like to add. I think it might also be worth while to when listing the questions that we're asking here is because we're saying why are we doing this, and this is the question we were discussing right now, and then later on down the questions of how much would a particular feature cost. I think one of the important questions we need to answer is the weighing the benefits versus the costs. This might be listed separately because especially when considering who the potential stakeholders who might be paying for this, for translating and translating contact information, then it might be just worthwhile to make this very clear that we need to weigh the benefit versus the cost and make due consideration for whoever's going to be paying. Thanks.
Yes, thank you very much for that. I think the idea behind the matrix that I mentioned before is pretty similar to that. So, yes, thank you for reminding us of that. Okay. I think that brings us more or less to the end of it. And remains for me to say thank you very much all of you for contributing today. And we've obviously covered two of the questions. We didn't get all the way through. We can use the wiki to link these very easily, so that's another reason for using the wiki. So please wait for the actions to come around in an email after the meeting, and we can continue to discuss on the mailing list and also suggest things for the wiki. And thank you very much, Peter, for what you're writing in the chat room.
Chris, Rudy. Maybe just one question to the group regarding the next calls. Is this time slot a good time slot for everybody, or is there a lot of concern about this time slot?
Thank you very much. As far as I can see, nobody wants to bring that up, so I think provisionally we should run with the same time slot, but obviously that's another thing we can discuss on the list, or we can even do a doodle poll if that becomes necessary. Okay, and the discussion in the chat room is very much along that line, so my instinct is if at all possible to stick to it. If it ain't fixed, if it ain't bust, don't fix it. Okay. Well, we're at the top of the hour, so I would like to thank you very much for this first meeting. I think it's promising, and I look forward to correspondence later in the week on the mailing list.
And thank you, Chris, for doing the good sharing work, as you used to do in the drafting team, too. So up to the next call, and... please have a look at the wiki in order to allow us to spread the information on the questions we have on the list for the next time.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Goodbye, then.
Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.